Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, Deal or No Deal this week on an epic scale in a campaign debate and country way up in the air. President Bush wants a $700 billion Wall Street bailout. He told the nation everything is on the line.
Our entire economy is in danger. So I propose that the federal government reduce the risk posed by these troubled assets and supply urgently needed money.
John McCain suspends his campaign and may forego tonight's debate to focus, he says, on the crisis.
I understand how important this debate is, and I'm very hopeful, but I also have to put the country first.
Barack Obama says it's high time to hash out who believes what for a country in trouble.
One of us is going to be in charge of this mess in 4 months. And the American people, I think, not only have a right, but an obligation to find out where we want to take the country and what we believe.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. You can join the conversation. What is going on here? Are you ready to vote somebody into or out of office? Should the Wall Street bailout live or die? And what are the implications either way? Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Gerald Seib, Assistant Managing Editor at the Wall Street Journal. He writes the paper's Capital Journal column. He's co-author of Pennsylvania Avenue, Profiles in Backroom Power. He was with us at both party conventions in Denver and St. Paul, and what a road since then. Jerry, great to have you back.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
With us from New York is Diane Brady, Senior Editor at Businessweek Magazine, where the lights are never out this week. Diane, great to have you back with us as well.
Thanks, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Jack, what a week. Welcome.
Hey, Tom. Jerry and Diane.
President Bush talking this morning, say this will happen. Speaking outside the White House, let's listen.
The legislative process is sometimes not very pretty, but we are going to get a package passed. We will rise to the occasion. Republicans and Democrats will come together and pass a substantial rescue plan.
Jerry Seib, are you so sure? What's going on here?
Well, I'm not so sure. I thought I was sure 2 days ago. Like a lot of people in town, you could sort of see this coming and thought the broad outlines were becoming clear, and then yesterday happened, so I'm not sure of anything anymore. I guess I would say only that the odds probably still favor this happening in the next 24 to 48 hours more than it not happening. But I don't know how you get from here to there at this point, honestly. The ball is pretty clearly in the House, in the court of both House Republicans and, I think, Senator John McCain, because House Republicans are clearly the reason this didn't happen last night. They've gone into revolt. And John McCain is either leading them or following them. It's not clear which. And the question of whether this falls into place, it depends almost entirely now on whether they swing around and find some compromise version they can support or not.
Diane Brady, the gun that hasn't fired this week is a big Wall Street sell-off that might stampede everybody into passing something. How long will Wall Street wait? Or is it possible that investors are getting their heads around the possibility that there's no bailout and things roll on anyway? Or are we on the cliff's edge?
I think cliff's edge is the right way to put it. I mean, there's a reason why people are calling this a crisis. I think people are waiting with bated breath to see what happens. You know, right now we're holding on with our fingertips. We can either pull the body in the window and everything's okay, or we fall off. And I think that if there is no package, then we will see a result on Wall Street.
And a result meaning?
Meaning a sell-off. I mean, there's a couple of scenarios people have looked at. Certainly one of the worst-case scenarios is that foreign investors will lose faith in our ability to manage our own system. And if they go, that's very bad news for Wall Street. There's a lot of instability and uncertainty about how much of this toxic debt is lying in these companies. And so there's a sense that people will certainly have a run on those. And just the overall health of the economy. We're seeing the effects of the credit squeeze right now at an even very visceral level with small businesses, individuals. The money is not going to ease up unless there is a package of this magnitude.
Jack Beatty, I mean, you can hardly blame foreign investors or anybody else from asking the question, is this United States capable of, you know, running its business here, of keeping its house in order? That spectacle at the White House cabinet room yesterday of the candidates at either end of the table, the president in the middle, with not a whole lot of leadership to exert, Paulson on his knees shouting at the cabinet table over this, and nothing coming out of it. What a picture, Jack.
Yes, it's almost as if our economy can't afford our politics. I mean, we just it's both systems are broken, but the latter system doesn't seem to be doing anything to help the former. You know, I agree with Jerry. I mean, John McCain went to Washington to lead, and he stayed to follow. I mean, he clearly got the message when he got there at a luncheon that the House Republicans weren't going to go for this. And I had the feeling that he was going to Washington to endorse some version of the Paulson plan. That seemed to have been the signal. And then he talked to the House Republicans, got there, and he said, and now they seem to be leading him. And what are they leading him toward? When you look at their program, it's very hard to see how that deals with the real crisis. Eliminating the capital gains tax, what would that do? An insurance program for these bad loans? Well, what if the loans fail and the government has to pay off? A relaxation of various regulations? Wait a minute, we got into this crisis because of relaxation of regulations. So it's a program from right field that really is from left field. It seems to have no it doesn't line up with the crisis. And if McCain signs on with that, it's a deal breaker. It seems to me the Democrats will not go ahead and vote without a substantial amount of Republican votes. And as it is, only about 30 of the 190-odd Republicans would vote for anything like the Paulson plan.
But, Jack, it is hard in many circles to make the argument today in the face of this for the plan, in the face of a kind of populist revolt against $700 billion for Wall Street bankers. It just, you know, people are just having a heck of a time swallowing that.
They are, but isn't this the point where leadership comes in, where people say, look, the Democrats have the major objections that people had to this bill, namely that there was no that the government would be exposed. That seems to have been dealt with. The government will get equity in these companies that it bails out, so the taxpayer will be protected somewhat there. The other objection was that there was no oversight to the Treasury. Now they want to set up an oversight board that would do that. Another objection was that there was no effort to help the individual homeowner losing his or her mortgage. The Democrats would deal with that. So the major objections that public opinion seemed to have at least been formally dealt with by the Democrats. And they've said, we're not going to give you the $700 billion. We're going to do this in installments. Now, someone, it seems to me, could go to the public and try to explain that and talk about the credit crunch and how that this would, you know, break it. But we're not hearing that.
It still looks like, at bottom, like a bailout. We don't know the details of how much equity, what would that look like, how much help for mortgage holders. Here's John McCain. Everybody wonders where he stands at this point. This is CBS Evening News with Katie Couric Wednesday. McCain answered Couric's question as to whether the maverick would come out during this financial crisis.
I have taken on members of my party and the leadership of my party on numerous occasions. But in this case, I am confident that we will reach a agreement that gets a majority of my colleagues on my side of the aisle as well as a majority on the other side.
McCain on Wednesday. Yesterday, Jerry Seib, all the reports out of the White House are that McCain, who had rushed back to Washington, scarcely spoke at this big meeting. It seems to be keeping a kind of, you know, inscrutable posture on this. You raised the question, Jerry, is John McCain leading House Republicans or following them here? How do you read what's going on with the Republican candidate?
I don't think we'll know until later today and into the weekend, because the question is whether both sides are posturing at this point. You know, obviously there's a lot of posturing going on. I mean, let's be honest. Hank Paulson, in his initial proposal, mm-hmm. asked for the moon and knew he wasn't going to get it. He, mm-hmm. give me $700 billion, no strings attached.
Yep.
I'll take care of it. Obviously, I think the Treasury Department knew that was going to be amended, and indeed, you know, it was, as Jack indicated, it was amended substantially during the course of the week. Many of the concerns, and frankly, the concerns that John McCain had raised, were all addressed in one fashion or another. The problem is that House Republicans realize that even after amendment, this idea of putting $700 billion on the line to save financial firms is not, as you said, Tom, a popular proposal by any means. Mm-hmm. You know, we at the Wall Street Journal with our colleagues at NBC did a poll this week and found that only about a third of the country says it's a good idea, a third says it's a bad idea, and a third says, I really don't know. That's not overwhelming support by any means. It's not a total rejection by the country, but it's clearly not popular. So the question is, can you make it popular? And I think to do that, somebody has to do a better job of explaining that the issue here is not bailing out Wall Street firms, but keeping the credit market in this country going so that the, you know, the local auto dealer can get some GMAC financing for people who want to buy a car, that the business that needs an overnight loan to keep its inventory in stock can get that money. Those are the and that the people who work for those kinds of businesses can therefore keep their jobs. That's the message that I think has not gotten through very well. Nobody has made that case very effectively, that this is about keeping the oil in the machine of American business, not about bailing out financial firms in Wall Street.
Diane Brady, we've just got half a minute before the break, but that's not some hypothetical. I mean, we're hearing that's already shutting down. Auto loans, already hard to get. Credit just drying up.
Very much. And I think that's an excellent point that was just made, which is that I don't think that the American public fully understands the degree to which this is brought down to their level. Excuse me. So I think what we have to do really is explain to them that what they're already seeing, the credit drying up, the possibility of interest rates going up, that is a direct impact from the fact that banks don't want to lend. You have to keep the payment system going or else it all freezes.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking about a week in the news like few others ever. Financial chaos, bailout, implosion, and campaign politics running right through the middle of everything. Joined by Diane Brady of Business Week, Gerald Seib from The Wall Street Journal, Jack Beatty's here. You can join us. Here's Barack Obama on the CBS Evening News with Katie Couric, suggesting that partisanship connected with the presidential election has gotten in the way of reaching a bailout deal.
It's important not to inject presidential politics into this. My preference is to use the phone and to talk to people and work with them, including Secretary Paulson, Chairman Bernanke, and others, in a way that's not a photo op, because I think sometimes that prevents things from getting done. It's amazing what you can get done when you're not looking to try to get credit for it.
But what should get done? Here's Republican Senator Richard Shelby, ranking Republican on the Senate Banking Committee, outlining why he disagreed with the Paulson bailout plan.
I have in my hand a letter with over 200 national economists, some of the smartest economists from MIT, Harvard, University of Chicago, Stanford, Yale, Harvard, Princeton, you name it. They tell us, do not adopt this Paulson plan or anything like it, that we need to consider other things. We should not rush to judgment on this. Too much is at stake.
He has in his hand 200 letters, Jerry Seib, that say don't go there, don't go to the Paulson plan. You know, it's a lot to ask citizens to sort through this. Is there a case to be made for another way to address this problem, this crisis, Jerry? And what might it look like? Would it look like what House Republicans are suggesting, some kind of insurance plan?
I think the answer to the question depends on how much time you think there is to get it done. If there's time, sure, there are alternatives. What the House Republicans are proposing is essentially a new insurance system for bad debt, self-insured in the sense that the people who hold the debt would pay premiums, the government would provide the insurance. If the debts go bad, there would be an insurance payment to the people who hold the debt because they have gotten it insured. Something like half of the debt securities in the U.S. Are insured by the government now. The idea would be make them all insurable. The government sets up a program, but it gets paid premiums by the people who hold the debt. And essentially what you would find out is how much of this debt is bad. You wouldn't assume it's all bad. You'd assume some of it will go bad. Then you pay off that, but you don't have to pay off all of it.
But isn't that sort of like what
self-financing.
Isn't that sort of like what AIG did? And AIG is down.
Right. No, that's the argument against it. The other argument against it is essentially that nobody knows what the value of any of this debt is. So you don't know what the insurance premium is supposed to be, because what are the chances it some of it goes bad or all of it goes bad? It's a hard market to create overnight. Again, if you had time and the markets would give you time to develop such a system, it seems to me plausible enough that you could do that. The question is, can it take root in the time that's really there before there's a genuine meltdown and credit markets totally freeze up?
Diane, how much time? Where are we on that? I mean, again, Wall Street hasn't sort of shot its big cannon this week. If you see a sell-off of a couple thousand points here, or who knows, it's going to change the tenor in a hurry, but is that imminent?
Well, I do think it's a matter of days. I think AIG is a pretty instructive case. You may remember that insurer needed $40 billion on a weekend. By the time Monday rolled around, we were talking $85 billion. Why? Because things move quickly. People get nervous. They start to demand their payments. Certainly with Wall Street, as we know, things can move very quickly and people can flee markets. So at this point, people are just waiting. If there is no sense of a deal, you're seeing the markets be very, very skittish. And the fear is everything will freeze up, and then the system will just grind to a halt. And that's not just a Wall Street issue. It's very much an issue about business. It's an issue about employment. I think we're already seeing, certainly even the credit cards are clamping down on people reducing lines of credit. So if that continues, I think that really what we're seeing as a recession could become a depression. That's the fear.
An astounding week, astounding images. Let's go to Kathy in Stamford, Connecticut. Kathy, you're on the air.
I think we've got a two-part problem. You've touched on some of it, but it's the message and the messenger. The message has been poorly framed from the beginning because you say Wall Street, and you've got portfolio people talking their language down to paycheck people. And the vernacular needed to be changed up from the beginning. And it's because now you've got people saying, I don't want to bail out Wall Street. We need to change the vernacular and say this is a bill to help American employers. Don't even say businesses. Say employers. Then people get employers' jobs. Okay. And portfolio people can't talk the language that works with paycheck people. But then, even worse, is if you can change the vernacular, and I think that is doable, but they need to start doing it today. There is right now no identified messenger with credibility who is trusted by people on all sides.
Yeah.
Last night on CNN, Paul Begala blurted out and said George Bush is a high-functioning moron. Well, okay, so that's where he is. McCain and Obama are tainted because they're politicians. Richard Shelby, oh,
hey, wait a minute. It's a democracy. Politicians do lead it. I mean, let's go to this.
I'm saying that if you look at what people are saying is they're not trusting anybody in Washington. So we need to find, then, who is that trusted figure? Who's the Lee Iacocca of now? Is it Bill? I don't know. Is it Bill Gates? Is it Warren Buffett? Is it Billy Graham?
Well, this is fascinating. Kathy, thank you very much for that. Jack Beatty, I mean, here is the moment where politics, you know, in countries that we think of as lesser democracies have fallen apart. Like, things get tough. Man on white horse, you need somebody who to come in from you don't know where. Bill Gates, here's the country. Or Warren Buffett, here's the White House. But, I mean, it is wild that you've got people thinking in these terms. And yet, politics are shot through this thing, and the solution has not emerged.
It has not emerged. But I think Kathy put her finger on it, and we've heard it also from Diane and Jerry. That is the message. I watched Chairman Bernanke try to explain reverse debt auctions. Maybe I've even misstated that. But it was testimony before the Senate committee. But he was trying to explain how these things work. And I could last a sentence and a half. And I just lost it. And suddenly I realized, wait a minute, stop talking about reverse debt auctions or whatever, and start talking about why we should care about this. And throughout, The opaque language, I agree with her, of Wall Street has been used, a way of signaling. I suppose it was a way of, signaling we're in charge, we know the language, we'll cast a spell over it. But the result has been the rest of us have just been thinking, reverse debt auctions? What in the name of heavens? Rather than, we need credit, we have to get the economy moving again. Already, unemployment is now, I think, worse than it's been the last month since September 2001. We've got the one of the worst month in August for housing in 17 years. You've got a slowdown in August, dramatic slowdown, apparently, in manufacturing. We have got to get the economy moving. And instead, these experts have been talking in this hermetic, opaque language, and people have not grasped the significance of it. And then we have the president at that meeting with his matchless eloquence saying, quote unquote, this sucker could go down.
Let's hear John McCain midweek saying he's suspending his campaign for the presidency to give all his attention to the financial crisis, calling for Barack Obama to do the same, call for postponing the presidential debate.
Tomorrow morning, I'll suspend my campaign and return to Washington after speaking at the Clinton Global Initiative. I've spoken to Senator Obama and informed him of my decision, and I've asked him to join me.
Barack Obama, at his own press conference same day, said he's in strong disagreement with McCain's request to suspend the campaign and postpone the debate.
It's my belief that this is exactly the time when the American people need to hear from the person who, in approximately 40 days, will be responsible for dealing with this mess. And I think that it is going to be part of the president's job to deal with more than one thing at once.
Jerry Seib, how do you see it? Debates, if they happen in Oxford, Mississippi, wonderful town, a distraction or kind of the heart of the matter here as the country's grappling with very big issues?
You know, it's hard to know, and it will depend on what the condition is at the hour the debates begin. But I think it's a huge gamble on John McCain's part to say that he's going to sort of torpedo the debates unless something seems to be happening at the time he does that. To show up or to not show up in Oxford, Mississippi, while nothing is happening to solve the problem he said we should all be focused on, seems to be a potential lose-lose scenario for John McCain to me. So whether the debates are a distraction or not, I think depends on what they are potentially distracting attention from in the first place.
Diane Brady, do you see evidence from New York on the cusp of Wall Street there that John McCain has returned to Washington and taken the reins and is pushing things toward a solution?
Well, certainly I think there's as much evidence that when he stepped in, the solution that had been mentioned in the morning suddenly no longer materialized. What I think is interesting is there has to be this delicate political dance going on right now. This crisis could not have come at a worse time, which is basically we have to get the solution, but at the same time, everybody has to position themselves so that they can then cast blame and heads will roll. There's no question, even if this deal goes through, somebody's going to have to pay politically for this. And so I think that McCain is doing a delicate dance. I think Obama also has received some criticism for being in some ways so distant from the problem. So, you know, how this one debate, how it plays out, I think nobody quite knows yet whether McCain will show up. But certainly what we're seeing with McCain and why we're seeing this deal unravel is because it's an election season and because the stakes are so high and everybody's watching the polls at the same time as they're watching the stock market.
What a picture. Mark is calling from Springfield, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm okay, I guess. What do you think?
Always a good show.
Thanks.
I think this is a bit of a tactic by John McCain. But I think it has the potential of giving two fatal blows to the Obama campaign, and it's on two issues, leadership and on the whole idea of continuing George Bush's policies. Here we've got the Democrats are in control of the House of Representatives and the Senate. If they wanted, then Nancy Pelosi and Obama could take control of the situation and pass this bill, and George Bush would sign it.
Yeah, but Mark, let me ask you, why should the Democrats alone step up and take the heat for a bill that there's so much fury across this country about when Republicans were large and in charge during a whole lot of the time when this mess got created? Why should Democrats do that alone?
Because that's called leadership. That's called leadership. And the second issue is regarding continuing George Bush's policies. Here we've got all the Democrats on George Bush's side, And you've got the Republicans fighting against the president. And Obama is, how is Obama now going to say that he, the Democratic Party, is against continuing George Bush's policies?
Yeah,
this is a huge statement, and they're in support of George Bush.
It is some kind of bramble, some kind of wild bramble right there. Mark, thanks for calling. Jerry, I mean, that's right. You've got this weird picture where Democrats are now lined up with the Republican president of the United States, Republican Treasury Secretary, who's on bended knee begging for this. And the House of Representatives, you know, where Republicans until only 2 years ago were in charge for a long time, saying, no way, this is not our thing. But isn't it their responsibility in very large part, Jerry?
Well, yeah. And the problem, though, in the analysis is that there is no Republican position. There are two Republican positions. People have tended to forget that Senate Republicans were on board for this in a big way. Senator Bennett from Utah spoke up yesterday and
yep.
when the compromise was announced and said, speaking, I think, for himself and the Republican caucus in the Senate, this is a good deal. We fixed some of the problems. It's important we get this done.
Right.
So you have two Republican parties now, and the question about John McCain is really which of those two parties is he with? And I don't think anybody knows the answer right now, and that's probably a conscious decision on his part because his emerging from this as a kind of a heroic figure depends on whether he can pull those two different Republican parties apart. So, yeah, there is a strange, odd bedfellows aspect to this in which Democrats are with the Bush White House and the Bush Treasury Department, but half the Republican Party is as well.
Jack, talk about a Statue of Liberty play. I mean, playing this for heroic, posture when, I mean, Diane Brady says you've got the whole economy on the cliff's edge here. With all that anger out there, it could work for John McCain, but Is this presidential to take this kind of risk with the whole economy?
It looks reckless, and I think it raises, as someone says in the Washington Post this morning, the temperament issue about John McCain. There is this lurching quality to his campaign, a crisis a week, rapid, vertiginous shifts in position over last week, for AIG, bailout against it, economy sound, it's not sound, a commission should investigate, I have my own plan. He's just desperate, and he's beginning to look desperate, and here it looks as if he's playing dice with the economy. This meeting yesterday was his idea. This was a mitzvah to him by the White House, and look what happened. To me, he looks very, very reckless indeed. But I want to speak to the point that Mark made, this idea that the Democrats could get wedded to this and have to. It's true, they're the governing party. They have the majority. It's their obligation to govern, but it isn't their obligation to go over the cliff. And there's a precedent here that I'm sure haunts them. Right after the 1932 election, in those days the president didn't take office till March 15th. Right after the election in November, Hoover called Franklin Roosevelt in and said, listen, let's both get together on what I want to do between now and when you take over. And Roosevelt said, no, I'm not going to do that. I haven't got responsibility here. You want to trap me into this? I'm not going to do it. And I think that idea of being trapped into the failed president's policies and having to carry them forward, that has to be haunting Democrats.
Diane, we've got just half a minute here before the break. I'm sorry, but what about it? John McCain reckless or principled here?
I think certainly it's a reckless move. There's no question that suddenly riding in at the last minute in the middle of delicate negotiations, it turns out, has not helped things. But, you know, as Jack said, nobody wants to be locked into this Faustian pact that American people are basically going to punish you for in the end. So they want to get this position through, but they want to do it in a way where they come out wiping their hands and saying it wasn't our fault.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Black humor on American politics this week. Into Chinese space shot, David Letterman hammered John McCain for suspending his campaign and, incidentally, canceling his appearance on Letterman's show.
You heard it here first. This doesn't smell right. You know, this just doesn't smell right because this is not the way a tested hero behaves. Somebody's putting something in his Metamucil.
Joe Biden said Franklin D. Roosevelt went on TV to address the 1929 market crash, more or less. Two problems. FDR wasn't in office and no TV addresses then. John Stewart had a field day of parody.
That's how anachronistic Joe Biden rolls. I remember when Lincoln, during the Revolutionary War, did a guest spot on The View. And he told those fellas, the war of Spanish aggression cannot stand.
And as the U.S. economy faced meltdown, China had a countdown, launching three astronauts for a walk in space. And up they go, a Chinese space age. Turns out the actual launch came a little after the announcement that it had taken place. So always some wrinkle on the Chinese front. Yet, there they go up. And what about the U.S.? Gerald Seib of the Wall Street Journal is with us. Diane Brady, senior editor at Businessweek magazine, and Jack Beatty. Let's go to Buffalo, New York. And Lou, you're on the air.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you for taking the call. Hey, you know, I think just as what Bunning out of the Republican out of Kentucky said, I mean, this is un-American. I mean, $700 billion. I mean, it costs $1 billion approximately to build the new Yankee Stadium in New York. I mean, this is 700 of those. That's a tremendous, it's an outrage. I mean, just like Bunning said.
So what would you have done? Don't do it? Go with the House Republican plan? Just let the market work it out itself, Lou? What?
Trickle down. I mean, Ronald Reagan, he's the one that asked for deregulation. And you know what? Buffett put some money in, and all of a sudden, the stock market took a spring.
Trickle down. I don't know. It's a hard rain going to fall here, maybe, Lou. But we hear that discomfort. Gerald Seib, you're at the Wall Street Journal, and you've heard Republicans this week saying this whole bailout is, I don't know if un-American was the word, or it's not capitalism, or it is socialism. How do you see that, Jerry?
Well, it is un-Republican, and it is kind of un-free market, and it's proposed, ironically, by a Republican administration, but it is probably a reflection of the times. Now, one of the other messages that hasn't gotten across very well this week is the notion that the price tag is probably not $700 billion. If this works, it would certainly be much less than $700 billion, and it wouldn't be $700 billion all laid out on the cash on the barrel head next week. It would be over time, and maybe not that much. I mean, $700 billion is a figure that was arrived at kind of by guesswork and was used largely because the Treasury wanted to put out a number so large that it would convince everybody in the markets that this problem is going to be solved, and that's how you establish a floor in the market, that's how you reestablish confidence, and that's how you finally find a value for some of these bad securities. So the notion that took hold in the wake of that was that this would cost taxpayers $700 billion cash on the barrel head, and that's unlikely to be the case if this goes through.
Diane, Jerry says it's not the bailout is not Republican, it's not free market, but the need for it comes at the end of, after many years of kind of Republican oversight here and Republican free market. I mean, maybe this is part and parcel of what the GOP has brought us.
You know, the root of the problem is that Americans have overspent and overborrowed. And by our estimates, it's about $3 trillion over historical averages over the last 10 years. So the banks certainly are to blame for lending us too much money. We're to blame for taking on debt that we couldn't handle. Certainly the government's to blame to some extent for the regulatory environment, and especially with some of these esoteric products that were allegedly insurance but in fact were speculative products that brought us even further down the pipe. I think that, there'd be a lot of time for blame, but one of the big things that I think Jerry brought up is that, in essence, why equity is so important here is that there is the potential for us to be paid back. If you look at the fact when the government took over the thrift banks in the 80s, we got our money back.
Meaning taxpayers would end up
basically
owning a chunk of these companies they're bailing out.
Yeah. Yes, look at AIG. In essence, the shareholders were wiped out in return for this $85 billion. They charged loan shark rates, in essence, and now they're going to sell off parts of what was, the gold standard in insurance. taxpayers will get their money back on that. AIG exist? No.
Let me ask you about that, though. Gerald Seib, do we really know how much equity? I mean, you could toss a little equity position for taxpayers in here, and it would, you know, could be just symbolic, or it could be a real serious ownership position. So if and when these bounce back, there's a big payoff. Is it clear which it is? Is it window dressing or the real deal that had been in the getting into the proposal?
There's no way to answer that question. And this is, in fact, one of the problems with the Paulson plan, was that it was so vague and general that questions like that couldn't be answered. In fact, originally there was no notion that the government would get an equity stake or a warrant in the companies that whose debt it took on. That was added along the way because it was essentially a bipartisan demand, but pushed particularly hard by Democrats. The idea of the government being paid back, originally it was much more rooted in the notion that if it took on bad debt, but that the market stabilized, that bad debt would become better debt over time, and that eventually much of it would be paid off, and the initial bill wouldn't be the total final bill. It would be less than that.
Jack Beatty, I mean, where's the market discipline if there's no real pound of flesh to be taken in return for a bailout, if a bailout comes?
Yeah, well, there it is. I mean, you have to throw that sort of thinking out the window in order to save the economy. But there's a precedent, you know, for this. Hoover started something called the Reconstruction Finance Corporation in 1932. It lent money, huge sums, to banks, to businesses, to localities, and it ran until 1953. And it got back, the government got back its money over the time, and in some cases with profit, because the banks that did better with this infusion of federal funds, their stock went up, and the government had an equity stake in those banks, and the government's equity went up. And so eventually the banks would buy up the government stock, the government would take that money and use it to help retire the loan it had floated. It was a successful program run for over 20 years, it was proposed by Hoover. People weren't screaming socialism at the time. They were screaming, let's get this economy moving. You don't have time for ideology at a moment like this.
Diane, I don't understand why Paulson wouldn't have asked for some equity position in the first place. That does smack, once it comes out, it smacks of a kind of collusion. Bail out, oh, boys, and you're back on your way, rolling in the dough, off you go. Why wouldn't it have been there from the get-go?
Well, I think one thing is it's hard to cram a lot of information into 3 pages, which I think was the length of the original plan that was
equity
presented.
Stake is 2 words, though, and a couple of, you know, a pronoun and a verb, and
no,
you're there.
I think that, yes, he is, if you look at his genotype, he came from Wall Street. He was the head of Goldman Sachs. His primary motivation in this plan was to get the markets moving again, to get capital flowing, to make sure these institutions don't collapse. And one thing he didn't want was any sort of anything to dissuade people from jumping on board. That's why he was also against, I believe, the caps on executive pay. And so, you know, I don't know if he considered the political ramifications so much as he was trying to say, here's the way out of this crisis. We'll throw a lot of money at it. But in this environment, especially where you have people whose homes are being taken away from them, you can't ask for a no-strings-attached deal.
Let's go to Charles in Des Moines, Iowa. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to have your guest talk to the idea of, instead of spending the money to break the Wall Street, Main Street issue, spend the money on Main Street. Infuse the economy by doing infrastructure with some or all of the money. Build bridges, build high-speed trains, work on solar projects, geothermal, deal with the energy issue, unemployment would stay down, and the money would certainly get to Wall Street eventually. They seem to always figure out how to get their piece.
Charles, let us pick it up. Gerald Seib, this is getting a pretty strong airing suddenly. I mean, you turn on the television, CNN is saying, what could we do with $700 billion? But Charles asks a serious question. What about announcing $700 billion poured into infrastructure and all the rest, some number that's starting to approach the cost of the Iraq war but spent on this country. Would that be an alternative that could stabilize the situation or not?
Well, what Charles is describing is essentially the Barack Obama idea for a second stimulus package, which is don't send checks out to individuals, send the money to states and local governments, let them get projects going that creates jobs, that creates spending, and it does work its way up through the entire economy.
But Obama's not talking about tomorrow or Monday. He's talking about after an election, if there's any money left.
And there's the problem, that you over time, that amount of money spent another way might have many of the effects that people desire. But the issue is here and now, and it's a credit markets issue again. I think one of the things that people don't really understand about this is that the impetus on the part of Hank Paulson to do this, to take this initiative, to send this flyer up, was not because some more banks were going to fail or some more brokerage houses were going to fail. It was because credit markets had essentially frozen and were about to collapse. It didn't really have to do with companies in the finance sector going under, but that's the way it appears to people, and that's, I think, why the public objections are so great. But the night they decided they had to do this at the Treasury Department and the Fed, they decided they had to do it because credit was about to stop. And that, again, that's the lubrication for all of American business. And that's a problem you have to solve right now, not over the next year or so.
Let's go to Amit in Watertown, Massachusetts. Amit, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a question. Right after the package was announced, I either heard on NPR or saw on the CNN website that Newt Gingrich had advised Republicans to run against the package so they could all run as change agents.
Yes, and you may have heard that right here. We had him on just a couple of days ago saying exactly that. What do you make of it?
And I'm wondering how come people are not talking about that as an election strategy as opposed to this being so righteously in favor of the American people. I don't see that over here. There is a huge crisis. Somebody has to solve it. And I'm wondering what your experts think about that.
Yeah, I mean, thanks, Jack Beatty. I mean, that takes us really to the debate, and our time's growing short, but who knows what's going to happen there. In Oxford, Mississippi, a wonderful southern town, William Faulkner's home there. I've walked those grounds at Roanoke, but it may be Obama alone there tonight. And Amit, our caller, says, you know, are the Republicans trying to do some jujitsu here and come out as change agents after a period where they have been the status quo?
Wouldn't that be something if they could bring that off? I think he's right that they are pushing, that the House Republicans, and again, Jerry reminds us, there are two parties here. The Senate Republicans seem to want to make some sort of deal to restore confidence now. But the House Republicans, for ideological reasons, but I think also clearly for political reasons, want to stop this in its tracks. And Newt Gingrich, with all due respect to his abilities, he's a kind of wrecker. You know what I mean? He just sort of takes a grenade and throws it in the middle of a problem. And then when you read what he wants to do, get rid of the capital gains tax and, I don't know, all this sort of thing, he's not really being responsible. And I sense this about these House Republicans. They're more, it's under the guise of high-mindedness. Oh, we can't be involved. But that really, right down there, they want the Democrats to be saddled with this unpopular bill so they can run against them.
Here's Alaska Governor Sarah Palin speaking with Katie Couric yesterday, the vice presidential candidate, stumbling a bit as she defended her statement that Alaska's proximity to Russia enhanced her foreign policy credentials.
We have trade missions back and forth. We do. It's very important when you consider even national security issues with Russia as Putin rears his head and comes into the airspace of the United States of America. Where do they go? It's Alaska. It's just right over the border.
Putin's rearing his head, Diane Brady, in American airspace. Have you seen that over the horizon from New York, Diane?
No, and I'm from Canada, and I've never seen him rear his head anywhere near there either. So I think it's sort of poignant in a way, the degree to which she's lost confidence, and I do put the blame on her handlers for essentially not letting her get out there. And at least, you know, I don't think I would have put her before Katie Couric. I might have put her in a more reasonable forum so she could test her chops on the Russia question before facing it there.
Jerry Seib, we had some fun with Joe Biden on FDR and television, but is it too much to ask a vice presidential candidate to go before the Dragon Lady Katie Couric?
Well, look, I totally agree with Diane. I think she should probably have been doing town hall meetings for the last 3 weeks, taking questions from voters, leaving aside journalists, you know, sort of work your way through the questions one by one, attract less attention every time out of the box, as opposed to making each of the setting a huge high-profile national TV
exercise, and which allows everybody to pick it apart for days afterwards. Anyway, it's a tactical question, but look, I mean, Joe Biden has said lots of things, as you pointed out, that are kind of raise eyebrows, and some of them seem kind of goofy, but he's out there talking every day. No one of those things seems to attract all that much attention, whereas every time Sarah Palin is in the box, it's a huge event, and I think tactically I wonder about that.
But, Jack, maybe it's just a problem that it's BS that it matters on foreign policy, just that you're a neighbor of Russia. I mean, she's saddled with that.
She is saddled with that. And, you know, I mean, that was a train wreck. And there's one theory about this McCain intervention, suspending the McCain campaign, rushing to Washington, that he wants to distract from her. That she is imploding so rapidly, and that it the reflection on him is so bad that he wants to create some kind of distraction just there, and that the real hope when the McCain campaign was somehow to push off that vice presidential debate next week, to push that off, to give her a little more time to get ready. Because if she has a performance anything like this in a debate, just answering questions, I think she could sink him.
Diane, again, we've just got half a minute. When do you think you're there in New York? When do you think Wall Street needs to see something out of Washington to keep this thing from tipping? Is it Friday night? Is it Monday morning? What's the sense on the street?
I think the next week. Certainly the fact is that everybody knows we're working toward a deal. That's very important. So far, we haven't seen the foreign investors flee. So I do think there's some more time to work it out so that it's right.
But not a whole lot. Up Against It in America, Diane Brady, senior editor at Business Week magazine, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Gerald Seib, assistant managing editor at the Wall Street Journal, writes the paper's Capital Journal column. Jerry, always great to have you.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, may your personal finances make it through the weekend, sir.
That's a stretch. Thank you.
Yeah, if ever. Listeners, a program note. 15 minutes after we recorded this conversation, John McCain announced he would join the Friday night debate with Barack Obama in Oxford, Mississippi. So it's on. We'll have full coverage on Monday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Have a good weekend. This is On Point.